Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thanks for being here. As always, another week has gone by. I mean, where the hell is the time going? It's the end of January now. It was just Christmas a couple of days ago, and before we know it, it'll be St. Patrick's Day, then the summer, then it'll be August, and we'll be sitting around going, why haven't we bought any players? The season's about to kick off tomorrow. I don't know what's happening. The world is just spinning far too fast for my liking. Anyway, welcome to the show. As I said, we're heading into an FA Cup weekend. We're going to play Southampton. Record against Southampton, not particularly great, but we will touch on that a little bit later on in the show. It's a bit of a different show, not different really, but longer in terms of what we might normally do. My guest today is Ken Early from Second Captains. Ken was with us to help kick off the season, and he came into studio earlier in the week, and we sat down to have a chat about, you know, the Premier League in general, what's going on. But as ever with Ken, the conversation was very interesting, and it sort of stretched on for a bit, for about 50 minutes, so we're going to do that. But I'll bring you that in maybe two parts. I'll give you a gap, a little bit of a pause where you can go and make a cup of tea or get a drink or a sandwich or I don't know what. Whatever you would like to do or not do. It's not that big of a gap. I'm not going to leave like 10 minutes of dead air. You can just pause it anyway. That's the beauty of podcasts, isn't it? So we'll be talking to Ken a little bit later on. And as I said, we've got FA Cup action against Southampton, and it's been an interesting kind of a week, I guess you would say. There's been the fallout, of course, from the 2-1 win. Well, not so much fallout from a 2-1 win over Burnley, but man, it was exciting and heart-stopping and everything else. We got the winner. But Arsene Wenger, of course, was charged with misconduct by the FA. He said he's pretty much going to accept the charges as they were given to him, but he's going to request a personal hearing. And as far as I know, that is going to take place today, Friday, at which point we'll find out what kind of a punishment they're going to mete out to him. They're definitely going to give him something. My guess is that he wants to go and put his case to them in person rather than just via a letter, which is what many managers do when they're hit with these charges. They just provide a letter outlining what it is that their version of events was. But I guess he wants to be face to face with them, because the accusation of shoving a referee, or shoving the fourth official rather, is a little bit more serious and could carry some heftier consequences than just some normal misconduct charges. So I guess he's going to go and try and turn on the Arsene Wenger charm and see if his ban will be reduced. I don't think there's any question that he is going to get a ban, and maybe by the time you've listened to this, that ban has been dished out, but we'll see. So it's been an interesting week for Arsene Wenger, interesting week for Granit Xhaka as well, who was sent off, now gets a 4-game ban because of his second sending off of the season. We did touch on this on the Arscast Extra on Monday with James. But of course, there was another incident during the week where he was accused of abusing an airport worker at Heathrow Airport. There was a bit of a set to when his brother-in-law or his girlfriend's brother wasn't allowed on a flight, and he took exception to this. There were words said. Arsene Wenger says that he completely and categorically denies the substance of the allegations. When the Met police reported it, it said, they were called because it had been reported to them, at least, that somebody had been racially abused, and Xhaka went and spoke to them. Arsene Wenger at his press conference yesterday said that he had spoken to Granit Xhaka, who categorically denied that he had used any kind of racist language towards the airport worker in question. Now, he didn't necessarily deny that there had been an argument or some words said, but he denied that there'd been any racist connotations to it. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. Police inquiries are ongoing, as far as we know, and we'll just have to wait and see. But apparently he was speaking in German, so the whole thing is like really an odd story that a third party who understood German, Swiss German perhaps, understood what he'd said under his breath or said at this point. I don't know. Anyway, it's a sort of incident you'd rather hadn't happened at all, of course, regardless of whether he used racist language or not. As frustrating as it can be to use airports at times, people are just doing their jobs and don't deserve to be abused for that, and certainly not abused either on the basis of the colour of their skin or their sex. So we'll obviously have to wait and see what happens when the police finish their inquiries. And until such time, you know, as we have actual facts, I guess, rather than just stuff that's being reported or alleged to have been said, I don't think it's right for anybody to pass any judgments. So let's just wait and see what happens with Granit Xhaka. He's going to be out of action for 4 games, as we know, because he's missed, this was his second straight red card of the season, and that's something he's going to have to learn about as well. Interesting to see Arsene Wenger talking about how he hadn't mastered the art of tackling and didn't think that he ever would. His advice to him was to stay up, which, you know, he meant stay on his feet rather than jumping in. So maybe when he comes back from this latest suspension, that will be something that's part and parcel of his game. So this weekend, we're playing Southampton in the FA Cup. And I got to say, I always say it, I love the FA Cup. But I tell you what I don't like. I don't like 5:30 kickoffs on a Saturday evening. I can't explain how much I don't like them. They're a pain in the arse. I mean, there's lots of things out there in the world that I don't like. You know, like Phil Collins, or dolphins, or cloves, or being late, or people who are late, or people who are sitting in the favourite seat I have in this bar I go to most weekends. I don't like it when they're sitting in my seat. I don't like cauliflower, or bringing my car to the NCT, which is the National Car Test, which it has to go for this month, which is really irritating. People who play music on their phones. You know those? When you're sitting on the bus and they play music on their phones, and you just use some headphones, you wankers. What about mouses? Mices that run out of batteries. I've got an Apple mouse. It's called a Magic Mouse. Not fucking magic, is it, if it runs out of batteries all the time? For fuck's sake, Apple. Michael Owen doing co-commentary. I don't like that. Scorpions in my shoes. I really have a big problem with that. People who don't pick up after their dogs. DJs who talk like this and laugh at their own jokes all the time. I don't like those guys one little bit. Owls. I wouldn't trust an owl as far as I could fucking throw him, to be perfectly honest. What about the movie Interstellar? I don't like that. The guy travels through space and time for 3 fucking hours and ends up behind his own bookcase. Get the fuck, seriously. What about the price of printer ink? Don't like that. I don't like things that are orange. Most things that are orange anyway. Oranges I quite like, but anything else that's orange, you know, I'm not a fan of at all. What about sitting in traffic or having to purchase underwear? I think underwear should be a human right. You should be supplied the kind of underwear that you want every year by the government. You should have enough underwear to get you through the year. If I ever ran for a political office, that would be my manifesto. That would be the main part of my campaign. Free underwear for everyone. Not just scratchy, itchy underwear, but no, nice underwear. And you'd have enough to get you through the year. For ladies and gentlemen as well. I think I'd be a shoo-in on a platform like that. I mean, I am just talking about, like, functional underwear here. I'm not talking about if you want to go out and buy something, you know, special or sexy. No, that's not the government's job. We're not here to supply you with, you know, lingerie or leather thongs for gentlemen who like to wear them. No. No, this is just underwear to get you through the week. To make your life just a little bit easier. Phone calls. I don't like phone calls. And I tell you what else I don't like. I don't like whenever it is that I order food online or ring up a pizza or whatever it is. They can never fucking find my house because Google Maps says my road is a cul-de-sac, which part of it is, but I'm not in the cul-de-sac bit. And they always go in and say, "Hi, I can't find your house. We're looking for number 23. And there's no 23. And I go, "Oh God, there is a 23. There is. It's just, you know, not in the cul-de-sac. I said that in the fucking order, but there you go. And I don't like 5:30 kick offs on a Saturday evening. They're just disruptive. They're badly timed, and that's it. I don't like them. And 2 of our games in March have been moved to 5:30 kickoffs as well, which is irritating to me because, have I mentioned, I don't like 5:30 kickoffs. But we've got a 5:30 kickoff this weekend against Southampton in the FA Cup. We might, on the far side of my chat with Ken, have a little bit of a chat about the team news and everything else that's available. But look, let's get on with the show and let's get on with the good chats with Ken Early. We're talking about football. We're talking about FIFA. We talk about Pogba. We talk about money, China, the Premier League title race, whether it's over or not, whether big things need to happen. Of course they do, we know that, but we, you know, it's a wide-ranging conversation. So settle down or keep walking the dog, walk the dog a bit longer, keep driving along the road, stay on the bus, whatever it is that you're doing when you're listening to this podcast. This is me and Ken Early from Second Captains. All right, delighted to welcome back to the show, mid-season chat with the man who helped us kick off the season from Second Captains, Ken Early. Hi.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I am well, and you?
Very good.
Good. How are you enjoying this Premier League season so far?
I've been enjoying it. I think it's actually been good, although I was enjoying it more before Chelsea sort of put so much distance between themselves and everyone, and now it's kind of like, well...
Yeah.
I mean, there's a small possibility of a... you know, massive Chelsea meltdown and kind of exciting title race. But it looks, the way they've been going,
yeah,
it looks as though they'll win quite easily now.
It's funny, though. I mean, they haven't had any sort of significant bad run of form. And you look at the table, it looks a little bit insurmountable, doesn't it?
They've only lost to the teams directly below them in the table.
Right.
So Arsenal, Tottenham and Liverpool are the only three teams who beat them.
Yeah.
And which is always a little bit annoying. If a champion team loses to all the other teams, you know what I mean? But just beats everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, they win on points, but there's always something a bit unsatisfying about that type of champion, I think. I'm trying to think of some other examples, but you know this kind of thing where if you lose to the teams that you beat.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a marathon, not a sprint, blah, blah. But, you know, you'd like to see them really... prove. I mean, they did have that massive win against Man United.
Yeah.
But, you know, Man United are only sixth. So,
yeah.
So they've still got to kind of, I think, show a couple of really good performances. I mean, they've been really consistent. It's obviously like, I mean, I think when we were talking the last time, I was a little bit skeptical of whether Antonio Conte would have an immediate positive impact. And, well,
it wasn't necessarily immediate, though, was it? It was like the 3-0 defeat to Arsenal that sparked him into a bit of a rethink.
Yeah.
I mean, you looked at them that day, the idea that they would then go on a 13-game winning streak was just, you know, it was as ridiculous as anything else that's going on in the world right now.
Yeah, but they've managed to just find what they're doing is not complicated.
Mm.
It's not like Guardiola, you know, it's not that type of, oh, you know, we've got to unlearn what we've learned and we've got to reconstitute everything about the game. It's just like, okay, you're defenders, you're attackers.
And give it to Costa.
Yeah, and head the ball away.
Mm.
And I think one of the things is that everybody had forgotten, well, not everybody, but certainly I had forgotten just how good a lot of these players are from their... previous season when they'd, you know, Hazard, it was like, well, Hazard clearly doesn't want to play for Chelsea. Costa doesn't want to play for Chelsea. They didn't have David Luiz at that stage. And they've obviously signed Kante, who is arguably the key player in the Premier League. You know, if you look at what's happened with ever since he's arrived, he's basically been at the top of the league. And Courtois. Courtois was again, talking about Madrid. Oh, it's such an amazing city. You know, Atletico or Real, doesn't really matter.
Mm.
And now Courtois is kind of playing again like the goalkeeper that originally played for Atletico that everyone was worried about Chelsea signing. I'm like, God, this is never going to let in another goal.
Yeah.
So those players have returned to form, which I suppose Conte deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, but you've also got to look at the other side of that, is that why were they so dismal the previous season? And obviously we go back to Mourinho and the self-destruction that went on there. It was much more to do with him and not wanting to play for him than not wanting to play for Chelsea. If he had stayed, you could see those guys going out the door. But
yeah, you know. He made an unbelievable mess of it. He really made an unbelievable mess of it. And I just love what's happening now this season. You know, Mourinho is sixth with Manchester United,
yeah,
who have the most expensive squad in the world. They have, they've CIES Football Observatory did the study on it, and they have the most expensive squad by both transfer fees and by wages.
Yeah,
and it's like this is another horrible underperformance from a team that's this good. You give him, I suppose, a little bit of slack for the fact that he's just taken over, but you know, this whole idea that he'd kind of wandered into a wasteland. Like he's trying to, it's like a post-apocalyptic scenario, and he's trying to rebuild civilization. Like in this, it's just nonsense.
It's true. And they're on. It's been quite funny, hasn't it? Because they had this bad run of form, and we might touch on some of the form that the other teams have shown. But you know, they've been consistently winning games over the last number of weeks, and they still haven't gone anywhere up the table. They're in the same position.
It's because everybody's winning those games. Well, apart from Liverpool, I suppose, are the team that seems to have problems, you know, winning Swansea, you know, winning the game against Swansea at home sort of thing. But all the top teams have done that. I mean, I think we are. Are we still in the situation? Maybe it's maybe not anymore this week, where all of the top four teams this season, if you go back to, you know, the 22 game mark last season, all of them would be top of the league with their current points. You know what I mean? Certainly Chelsea would be miles out in front. I'm pretty sure Arsenal would be top. Tottenham and Liverpool, I'm not so sure. But, you know, we're talking about level. And this season, the standard is evidently, you know, 10 points. It's maybe going to be, well, it's going to be 10 points higher, I guess. So it's just a sort of reassertion of the rich teams, you know, with bigger squads, kind of putting down that rebellion of last season.
Yeah, I mean, it does show, though, how tight things are. Obviously, you look at what Chelsea have done, and their run is pretty much unprecedented. And when any team goes on and wins, whatever, 13 games, so that's 39 points.
Yeah.
You know, in one run, it's just, it's very difficult to keep up. But, you know, there is still a little bit of wiggle room for those chasing. But Arsenal have had a little bit of a bad spell when they lost to Everton and Man City. Manchester City have had their problems. Tottenham had a run earlier in the season when they only won 1-9. Liverpool, as you said, are having their difficulties at the moment. Manchester United started the season really poorly, and they found a little bit of form. But if you look at the difference between United in sixth and Arsenal in second, is still only 6 points. So it is remarably tight when you take all that into account.
Yeah, although what's the gap between United and Everton in seventh? I mean, it might be closer to 10 points. You know? So there's kind of, that group is obviously separated.
Yeah.
But, it's hard. Obviously, the Champions League now becomes a thing. Although the Champions League is a prize no one wants now.
It's not as important anymore, is it? Because you don't need the money. It was a case that when you finished in the top four and you got Champions League football, it provided you with this financial boost that helped you separate yourselves from all the rest of the teams, which isn't there anymore because of the money that's sloshing around the Premier League.
Well, it used to be like a transformative amount of money where it would have a huge effect on the quality of your squad, the size of your squad that you could actually support, the type of player who would want to join you.
If
your turnover is 100 million and you're getting, you know, 25 million from the Champions League, that's a huge percentage.
Yeah.
If your turnover is 400 million and the Champions League is
25 million,
you've gone from like it being an extra 25% to it being, you know, an extra 8 or 10%, which isn't enough to make, to improve your squad to the extent that you can actually be competitive in both.
Yeah.
It's really difficult now. So it's kind of like, it's viewed now as this like a leech attached to you that's like draining your life force as you're trying to concentrate on, you know, doing well in the Premier League, and suddenly you have to play these Champions League games against these silly teams like Paris and Roma, and, you know, who are these guys? You know, why are we wasting our time with these midweek kickabouts?
Sure.
You know, that's kind of the attitude that seems to have crept in to the Premier League.
Do you think it's lost its luster, the Champions League, in terms of, certainly in the group stages, it all feels very familiar. There isn't an awful lot of excitement about it. And I do wonder, because it was one of the things that people always said, you have to be in the Champions League to keep your best players. But, I mean, Chelsea have showed, when they plummeted out of the Champions League, and Manchester United to an extent as well.
Pogba, you know. Pogba joined the world record transfer, and he's not playing the Champions League, and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose ideally you want. I mean, has it lost? Like, I think it's still the team that wins it can say we're the best in Europe. You know? And you know, if you put the English, Spanish, German, Italian teams together, and the Spanish teams keep winning, you know, it's kind of hard to make the argument that it's embarrassing. It is actually embarrassing for the Premier League to be so much richer and to be. Every season, just this same thing happened. Like I'm wondering if maybe it's reaching a tipping point now because, you know, you can see Ronaldo slowing down. You can see that Messi. I mean, Messi's going to be 30. Suarez was 30 yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
Or the other day.
Happy birthday, Luis.
Shane Long was 30, of course.
Happy birthday, Shane, as well, of course.
But so maybe these amazing players that have been there the last, you know, few seasons, you know, are they necessarily going to be able to replace them? You know, they'd be doing well. I mean, you can throw a lot of money at players, but they're not necessarily going to be as good as Ronaldo. You could break the world transfer record. The player you get is almost certainly not going to be as good. You know, you're doing your best, and there just isn't another one. You figure that eventually this kind of gravitational force of all the Premier League money is going to have to make an impact. It's going to have to sort of drive them to the semi-finals or finals.
Sure,
but as of yet, there's no. I mean, do you expect that to happen this season? I certainly don't.
Well, it's very well. From
maybe if Chelsea were in there,
maybe. But I mean, Manchester City, they're still in it.
They are.
Arsenal.
Everyone's still in, apart from Tottenham.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to see Arsenal do it, given the opposition once more. You know, Bayern or Barcelona. Again, that comes down to. Or back to the tediousness of the Champions League and the repetitiveness of the fixtures in a way.
Stage is so boring, you know. But what can you do about that? Like, I mean, it's hard to see what they can do. I mean, this is what's happened. It's like this force essentially the inequality in the game. I mean, you've got teams which are like invincible, like giants, you know, which crush Champions League. It's impossible for. It's impossible to imagine Barcelona not coming through a Champions League group.
Yeah,
you know, maybe they might lose a game. They might like go to Kazan or something and lose
because it's cold and
and they don't want to be there. But you know they're going to come through. There's no sense of this game mattering. This results mattering. You know, it's just the same teams are going to get through. And then you're going to get some good games. You know, the probably the best games of the season are the Champions League semifinals. You know, but again, it's always the same kind of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and plus one. You know, I suppose Atletico, but in a few times. But like, that is a bit boring. And the English teams kind of deserve a bit of blame for how miserably they've underperformed. I think they've been pathetic. They've been really pathetic. But from their point of view, it's becoming less and less of a priority. It's just, well, the main thing is this Premier League. The main thing is finishing in the top four of the Premier League.
Yeah.
So we can get back into the competition we don't want to be in. We get the money for that, but mainly stay competitive in the competition we are now focused on.
Yeah.
So, you know, they can't claim to be the best in the world unless they win the Champions League. But at the moment, they don't seem focused enough on it.
Yeah. And the money in the Premier League is obviously causing some issues as well. I think in the long term, when you look at it, and you've spoken about it on the podcast, on the Second Captain's podcast, about viewing figures and attention spans, and that there seems to be this assumption that
it will just keep going.
It will just keep going. And I think maybe we spoke about this a year ago or 2 years ago, that it felt really like a bit of a bubble, like a housing bubble. And at some point, it's going to crash.
It is a crazy bubble. I mean, if you got like Hull City getting more money than you know, Bayern for TV, which they get way more.
Yeah,
that's obviously wrong. it doesn't make any sense. The only thing is, you know, maybe there's another bubble coming up that they can sort of, you know, help to inflate their bubble for a little bit more, which is the Chinese like financial bubble.
Sure.
You know, when you've got Chinese businessmen paying like. How much was Jackson Martinez? Like 40 million?
I don't know.
I mean, buying West Brom for how much was West Brom? 200 million or something crazy like that? I mean, what is going on? Why? I was talking to a friend of mine talking about this. He's like, why? If you were a Chinese businessman and you had like 200 million pounds, you know, whatever, you know, $201 million or whatever that is now, and you're like, well, how will I invest my money? Why would you buy West Brom? That's like, he was comparing it to when, you know, 2006, when Irish property tycoons started buying up, you know, Claridges and all these sort of trophy hotels in London. You know what I mean? Because they're like, oh, we've got more money than brains, like a lot more, and we need to and we need to show how important we are now by buying up all of these symbols of Britannia with all the money that we have, which is, you know, evidently infinite. And everyone knows how that worked out. But it was a symptom of like an underlying craziness, like an underlying thing which had lost the logic.
Yeah.
And this Chinese thing, I mean, you know, West Brom for 200 million, Vancouver property prices or whatever. Like Vancouver property prices are nearly as expensive as, they spend nearly as much and more on those than on football players. So this, something strange is going on there, and I don't know if it's good from the Premier League's point of view. If we can just, it's increasingly difficult, I found, over the last few months to concentrate on any of this stuff because of the crazy stuff that's happening everywhere. And it's kind of like, okay, usually the football kind of
is an escape.
Now I'm kind of like, what's going on?
Well, I mean, it is. The China thing is a bit weird. And I think if you buy West Brom for 200 million euros or 200 million pounds, it's probably like 2% of what you've got, because you just go, I'll just buy that for the laugh.
Well, maybe. Know? Maybe it is. Maybe
I'd say it's just it probably
like,
is.
Oh, because we can't find enough foreign places to just bung money into just to keep it outside of China. God knows what's going to happen here.
Yeah. But I mean, it is something that the Premier League are at some point are going to have to contend with. I think they're trying to put some rules in over there. You can only have three foreign players and some of these huge contracts that have been offered. But I mean, going back to Costa, for example, and the stuff that happened with him and his, you know, back injury in inverted commas and the offer that he had on the table from China.
Yeah.
I mean, how much do you put in that story being accurate? That, you know, here's Diego Costa playing for a team that looks like it's going to win the Premier League at a canter, and is his head really turned in January because of the money that's coming his way?
Well,
I find it strange.
You don't think it's well something obviously did happen, because he missed some two games, did he?
Yeah.
So there was evidently an incident of some kind at the training ground. You know, there was a bit of an angry exchange, and I mean, so whether that was because of this Chinese offer, which, you know, apparently does legitimately exist, whether that was the issue that led to the bust up. I mean, I think the reason Costa was out of the team was because of the bust up.
Yeah.
Was because, you know, he had failed to show the appropriate level of respect to, you know, the training, the coaching staff and all that kind of stuff. And he's back in because they've obviously sorted that out. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, he's definitely not interested in going to China now. Would he be interested in going there? I think absolutely. Why wouldn't he? I mean, he was being offered like five times his salary. And that's, I mean, his salary is already pretty big. So we're talking about a lot of money. He's already in a place which to him is as foreign as it gets. I mean, you see, Costa was one of these players who just steadfastly refuses to speak English. You know, it's not like Robert Pires or something who, you know, is just a bit quiet and, you know, could probably understand what you were saying to him, but just preferred to speak in French. It's like, oh, like I'm not, he's more like Tevez. You know, it's like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm not learning this shit.
But it's like, you know, Tevez is obviously now in China as the best paid sportsman in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a golfer who makes more than him, I don't know. But in terms of a salaried sportsman, he's top now. He's more than LeBron James. I mean, he's like, I can't believe this. I mean, if you saw what he was saying to the Boca fans, you know, because he had left Juventus. I mean, he had an amazing last season at Juventus. He was Serie A Player of the Year. He was in the Champions League final, won like the double, played really well. Was like, okay, I just feel like I'm home now. Like, I think I've done enough. You know, I've won everything in Europe. He did win the Champions League with Man United before. And he was like, okay, I'm going to go home now. And one of the things that he said when he arrived back in Buenos Aires was, I'm so glad that I don't have to speak English anymore. Or, you know, I'll never have to speak that again. Like, to him, the sound of English is just great on his nerves. So what I'm saying is that it seems as though Diego Costa, like, why would you want to, you're in Chelsea, fashionable West London, you know, it's a great setup. You know, why would you want to leave that to go to China, you know, where you probably have to wear a mask over your face to, you know, the smog and all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And he's like, look, you know, London ain't all that. You know, you think this place is, I feel like I might as well be on Mars where I am. So I don't feel as though going to China is really that much of a leap for me.
Yeah.
You know, I won't be able to understand what anyone's saying to me. You know, I can't, it's already the case.
Yeah.
I suppose there's probably not a big Portuguese speaking, where is it, Tianjin or where, I forget which, the city of the club that he was offered to, there probably isn't a massive Portuguese speaking community there, but like, is Costa that much of a social guy? Is he out? Mm. Actually, he kind of is, isn't he?
That's, I don't know. Yeah, I think things. There's been some suggestions.
DJ,
yeah,
DJ. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, for you know, he's a guy. He abandoned his homeland for career purposes.
Sure.
You know, he left. He decided to become a Spanish player.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, you know.
So we put nothing past him. That's basically
I would, if I was him, I would go.
Yeah. But I mean, is there a sporting consideration, though? Or do you think they even think about that? Because
what's
I remember going to see. Well, the sporting consideration is I remember seeing a video of Ramirez. And after he went to China, and it was like, Ramirez scores brilliant overhead kick. And the video was like, it was, I was expecting like match footage, and it was a video of somebody sitting in the crowd with a phone or a camcorder or something.
Yeah.
And behind the goal, it wasn't a stand or a terrace, it was a wall. It was like in a fucking schoolyard. It looked just ridiculous. So, you know, when you're a top level footballer, I guess you have to balance the money that's on offer and the money that you can earn with some enjoyment from the game.
Oh,
or
geez.
Some, you know, would anybody set out in their career to win the Chinese Premier League or whatever the cup is there? At least there's some prestige with the football in Europe, even if it is as alien to him as China would be.
There obviously is, but I mean, Costa's already won, you know, La Liga. He's won the Premier League. He didn't win the Champions League. He was in the final, but he's kind of done. He's done a lot.
Yeah.
But he's kind of proved. Look, I'm a serious player. You know, he was. Was he top scorer in the... I'm not sure if he... I think he was top scorer in Spain.
Mm.
I'm not sure if he was top scorer in... I don't think he was, actually, in England. He started out looking like he was going to be and then tailed off the season they won the league. Mm. Maybe he'll do it this season. But he's kind of like, what more do I need to really prove here?
Yeah.
I mean, is it... you're talking about the sporting question. I mean, I saw Michael Ballack had some... Michael Ballack was talking about this during the week, and he was saying, look... From his point of view, you know, this is what it's all about. Don't forget, Michael Ballack grew up in like Karl Marx Stadt. That's where he grew up, right? He grew up with a certain ethos. until he was 13 years old, he was in like the Sportschule of, you know, in East Germany,
yeah.
And he was taught to value certain things over other things. He was like, oh, this is. How could you leave behind the sporting excellence of European football? I'm not saying, of course, that it will always be this way. You know, the market regulates. I recognize maybe in the future it will not be Europe, but Europe is the pinnacle. And why would you want to play anywhere else?
Mm.
That's, yeah, okay. That's kind of sporting values. But this is no longer really a sport. You know, it's like it's becoming less and less. I mean, the World Cup is not a sport. It's not about sport anymore.
Yeah,
the World Cup used to be the most amazing sporting event in the world. Now it's just this joke. It's like, you know, how many, 48 teams now? It's just like, hey, let's all come along and, you know, here's some money. We'll give you all some money. Here's some hotel deals. You know, buy some hotel packages. You know, let's sell some TV rights. That's all it is.
Yeah.
As a sporting contest, like the players, I don't think even take it seriously anymore. They recognize it for what it is. You know, it's maybe good for marketing.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure scoring that goal in the final was worth a lot of money to Mario Götze. Maybe that's an extreme example. Götze scoring the winning goal in the World Cup final for his country. Yeah, that, I mean, that's good. Like, you know, something he can be proud of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In addition to the fact that it probably helps him to make more money, you know, off the back of it. Like, but it's not like FIFA's attitude to it is they obviously don't care about the sporting side. If they did, they would be cutting teams out of the World Cup, not adding them.
Yeah,
you know, they would be. They'd be like, okay, we want to have a short elite tournament, where players can perform at the highest level. Instead, they've said, let's just have a tournament with everybody. So what you've also done there is ruin your qualifying campaign. Not ruin them, but you've diluted the qualifiers as well. Like the Euro 2016 qualifiers.
Yeah.
we're kind of good from Ireland's point of view, because we were like, the race for third is competitive. It's us and Scotland, you know, and we, so that was good. But like, you know, Germany lost to Ireland. Did they look bothered? Like, they knew it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So all of international football is kind of becoming this waste of time.
But they've been doing that for years, that it used to be the case that the it was seen as the very top of the game, was playing international football was seen as the top of the game. You see it now, even when people are referred to as England international or French international, as if that still should be the thing that defines them. Mm. But it's clear that when you look at what FIFA have done, the way that they've acted, that more and more it becomes, it's just not good football.
No, it's not.
On
it's,
top
it's,
of everything else.
It's crap compared to the... And that is because of the thing that we were talking about previously, like the effect in the Champions League of, you know, a team like look at Barcelona. Barcelona have their front three is the best player in Argentina, the best player in Uruguay, and the best player in Brazil. All three of them together, just in one part of one team. Now, okay, that was just not possible before. You didn't have teams like that before. You know, a team might have... you know, what was the Napoli team had, like Maradona, he was the best player in the world, but like, look at that, you know, the other players, Careca was like a decent striker, you know, Alemão was like a decent Brazilian midfielder. It wasn't like a global all-stars, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So you get such concentrations of talent now at these elite clubs, and I mean, you include the top Premier League clubs in those as well. They're way better than any international team. Like previously, the international team of Brazil, you know, that was where you saw the biggest concentration of talent that you could see in one team.
Yeah.
You know, that you had to look at the international side of a country like Italy or Germany or Brazil. And now the club sides are way better than those teams.
Mm.
And it's like, whether FIFA recognized that or not, I mean, FIFA, I think it's kind of unrelated, but FIFA's whole attitude has been, oh, let's just try. And for political reasons, you know, whoever, whether it's Sepp Blatter or Infantino, you know, to get voting blocks on side, expand the tournament, bring in more teams, which obviously, you know, it's like printing money. You know what I mean? It's like we're going to print off a few more World Cup matches and distribute them. You know, the value of these matches is going down.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of good, you know, for a country like Ireland. Say we're in the World Cup. Obviously, the day we play in the World Cup, everyone will be, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, we'll all be watching. There'll be like 2 million people watching on TV.
Mm.
As a sporting contest, the sports side of it is irrelevant. It's just an event. It's like a...
you think back to even to 1990, and the reason why it was such a thing was because of how difficult it was to qualify.
It was high-level achievement.
Yeah,
like, it
exactly.
was serious, you know? It was like, you know, whatever happens in the Olympics, you know, what are the other big sporting contests in the world, you know, this was right up there, and now it's just like, come on, you know, a semi-interested Germany, like a totally uninterested Germany, I have to say, in our World Cup group, we beat the world champions, and it's great, like it's an amazing result, but like we all know, if Germany had needed to get a result in that game, we would have been doing very well,
yeah,
you know, to win,
sure,
if they really had needed to do something,
sure,
you know, had. I mean, the Euros, the most recent Euros, Italy against Spain. I remember Italy beat Spain, played quite well. You know, that was one of those big Conte victories, and he's going nuts. Conte cared more about it than anybody else in the stadium, by miles. And if you saw how little the Spanish players cared and how relieved they seemed to me to be out of this nightmare. Like they've been trapped in this international football thing. Like at first they were seduced by the dream, you know, winning the trophy at last, you know, it was amazing. We've done what Spain could never do. We've finally done it. And then it's like, oh, we've got to do it again. And oh, no, we're having another tournament now. They just wanted, they had no interest anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This isn't, compared to what we do in club football, you know, this is just, I mean, you see, even club football, we were talking about whether it's a sport. Like, look at, it's the different priorities are taking over. You know, you saw the Man United Liverpool game the other day. Hashtag Pogba, you know? It's like this. It's like this
cult
game.
Of personality.
Yeah, it's like the purpose. It's almost the purpose of this game has become. It now exists as a kind of a marketing vehicle for
anything.
Pogba
or anything.
Yeah,
yeah.
You see the Money League results came out the other day. You know, Manchester United are now at the top or whatever.
Mm.
And if you look at United's like breakdown, it's like 53%. Of the money comes from commercial revenue, all the deals, all the sponsorship deals, which means that their main the main thing that Manchester United produce now, or the thing that they're getting most of their money from, the thing that pays most of their, you know, income, is not selling like football matches or football results or, you know, goals or points or Premier League titles or any of that. It's literally selling all the people who are watching Manchester United matches to like Mr. Potato, you know, or Mr. Potato or Castillero El Diablo.
Yeah, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, who are all the other...
there is a devil growing.
Loads of sponsors they have. Exactly. There's but that's... It becomes about the function of Manchester United now as seen by the people who actually run the club. Ed Woodward and Richard Arnold is an audience generating machine. It's not about winning football games. Football is not really the priority. The priority is audience. You know, how can we get the most people watching? How can we generate the highest ratings? Because the ratings are what make the difference between us making, you know, a lot, sure, between us being the top of the Money League and only third.
Yeah.
And while we're top, we ain't never getting sacked.
There you go. There's part one of the conversation with Ken Early from Second Captains. We're going to take a very short break, time for you to, I don't know, make a sandwich, make a cup of tea, have another beer, whatever it is you want to do. We've got to take a short break. We're right back and we pick up the conversation more or less, no, not more or less, exactly where it left off there.
I should have shut up. I regret everything. I should have shut up. It was nothing bad. I should have shut up.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Well, I mean, that's the thing, and it's quite funny because obviously if you've got more money and you're generating more revenue, then you can make your team more competitive and you can spend the money on the team as Manchester United have done. And, you know, maybe they are a bit more competitive, but they're still sixth.
Yeah.
And I see sometimes, you know, there's obviously more information and more analysis of football teams and football clubs than there ever was. And one of the things that you see... Arsenal fans or certain sections of Arsenal fans who are invested in this kind of thing bemoaning the lack of commercial income that the club makes in comparison to clubs like Manchester United. I don't think anybody really expects Arsenal to make as much money as Manchester United simply because they're so huge that there's no way that, you know, Arsenal could win the Premier League for the next 10 years and they wouldn't be as big a club as Manchester United in terms of the global reach, etc. But it's then trying to find that balance. Well, okay, you actually want the club to become more of or less of a sporting organization and more of a commercial and marketing one. It's trying to find that balance between, okay, yeah, if you do sell more Mr. Potato Chips or wine sponsorships or whatever, then you can invest that back in the team. But even so, there's no guarantee that by doing that you become any more successful as a football club.
No, and in some ways it makes it more difficult, I think, to be successful as a football club because of the... It's like what was happening at Real Madrid for ages ago. You know, the Galacticos must play.
Yeah.
And you know, the manager might be like, well, you know, Beckham is actually not that good. Like, and there's nowhere he fits in this team.
Mm.
And it's like, well, you're sacked. we'll just have to find a manager who is going to play David Beckham.
Yeah.
You know, and that becomes the... That sort of becomes a priority. Like hashtag Pogba, I thought was amazing. Pogba had a terrible game. I didn't think it was an unrelated fact that his name was on all these hoardings. You know, I wondered what Alex Ferguson would have made of this. You know, say you're Ferguson. Ferguson doesn't have these. This was all, you know, he grew up well before this kind of attitude took over. Actually, this game is about stars and it's about attracting eyeballs and it's about selling those eyeballs to sponsors. That's what football is about. Ferguson kind of grew up in a time of muscular Christianity, you know, boys club hazing and, you know, Presbyterian values and all this kind of stuff. And he was very focused on the sporting aspect of it.
Yeah.
He would have seen a player who, like a young player who is under enormous pressure. You know, like the whole stadium is like geared up to pressurize him. You know, it's like hashtag Pogba, what's he going to do now? And the answer is get the ball and like worry, oh my God, I've got to do something amazing. I feel like I've got to do something amazing every time I got the ball. Mm. Result is that he gets the ball, dawdles on it and gets robbed and actually ends up being their worst player.
Mm.
You know, gave away a penalty. He's like having a meltdown, right? He's under so much pressure. Like, I think Ferguson maybe would have taken him off, but I'm sure that he would have been like, I mean, this is the imaginary Alex Ferguson who always does everything right, you know, this kind of figure who you hear in punditry over the last few years. He always did everything right.
Sure.
but the idea of one player being singled out and put on such a pedestal in a pressure game like that, I think he would have seen as like, this is warping what should be happening in my team.
Well, I mean, wasn't he like famous for, you know, young guys coming in and they've got their contract, they've got a bit of money and they come in like driving.
Pogba?
He
booted Pogba. did you see that there was an interview with Simon Cooper, did an interview with Mino Raiola where Raiola described the interaction that he'd had with Ferguson. He was in the office with Ferguson and he's like, we're not signing this. I have two chihuahuas. They would not sign this contract. And Ferguson's like, you're a twat. But obviously he didn't say twat, right? He didn't say it. But that was Ferguson's response. He said that twice to Raiola. We know what he said instead of twat. But he's like, that was his. And Pogba, then the club ends up buying Pogba back for like, I mean, Jesus Christ, what a disaster. But his attitude was, no, this is, you know, if you think you're, If I give you this, it's like you're going to think you have to justify it. Every time you get the ball, it's going to be like, oh, well, sure. What am I going to do now? Will I score from 30 yards? Will I, like, you know, will I? No, just pass the ball to the best positioned teammate, dickhead. That's what this game is.
Yeah.
You know, you are not like, just because, but everything around Pogba is telling him, you are the star and now you have to justify it. And it's too much. That's not what football is.
Yeah.
But like, that's what it is becoming.
Well, that's the marketing department calling the shots.
The problem with Arsenal, by the way, is not that they don't have enough money, it's that they don't spend the money they have. And I mean, okay, maybe there's wisdom in that. Maybe their reasoning is, look, we actually spend quite a lot of money. We've got like a few 40 million players.
Yeah.
We've got a pretty good squad. This is the way we think is the most sensible way to, you know, they have quite a flat wage distribution, you know, where you know they're kind of paying everyone not the same, but like there's not
no
much
massive
inequality.
Gaps, yeah.
And they think that's obviously a good thing for team spirit, whether it is or not. I think that might be Arsene Wenger showing his age a little bit. These players seem to be comfortable with the idea of inequality in their wages. You know, I always want, like, you know, say the MLS where you'd have like there was a story about Beckham in the when Beckham went to LA Galaxy. Grant Wall wrote a book about him, in which was mainly just Landon Donovan bitching about Beckham. And one of the stories was like he took his teammates for dinner, but all alligator arms, Beckham couldn't like seem to reach down to his wallet to pay the bill. And like he's getting, you know, $5 million a year, or when they announced his contract, it was like a $250 million contract, but obviously it included loads of sponsorship stuff. So he was making an enormous amount of money, and some of his teammates were on like $25,000.
Yeah,
you know, and I was thinking, I went to see Robbie Keane in an MLS Cup final a couple of years ago, and he was getting paid 50 times as much as the defender. He went like, i.e. 5 million versus 100 grand against the defender who he eventually in extra time got the better of, but like 50 times as much. That's crazy. How can you have these wealth differentials and not have a revolution in the dressing room? The answer is all of those players hope to be, they put up with it on the basis that maybe one day we'll make 5 million. You won't, you never will, but but that's what, it's that delusion that sort of keeps it in check. So maybe Arsenal need to recognize, look, if we paid Sanchez, you know, a crazy amount of money, it's not like Jenkinson is going to, is Jenkinson still there?
Just about, hanging on by his fingernails.
It's not like Jenkinson is going to be battering down the office or like printing pamphlets and urging revolution against it. You know, no one's going to give a shit about Jenkinson.
The Carl Jenkinson revolution, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, I think that's a good point, and there are players who are clearly more valuable. I think most players in a squad will do that, but when it comes down to it, if Sanchez gets paid, let's say, 300 grand a year, the reality of football and agents and the business side of the game is that someone like, you know, take someone like Lauren Koscielny, who arguably is as important to Arsenal as Alexis Sanchez is in very different ways, obviously, is going to come along and say, well, look, that's all well and good that Alexis is getting that, and, you know, his performances merit that, but by the same token, my guy shouldn't be paid half as much as him, you know? So there is... There is that balance, and I think, you know, when it comes to Ozil, when it comes to Sanchez, Arsenal are really going to have to push the boat out, but I think they might do it in slightly roundabout ways. You know, there are ways of paying players that aren't necessarily
legal.
Just their legal, but just their salary, you know, so there'd be bonuses and image rights and all those kind of things. You
employee
know,
I think benefit trusts.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they can invest in some movie scheme or something.
That's great.
But look, I mean, what have you made of Arsenal this season? You know,
it's
looking at
second.
It from
it's like, what's, how is this happening? How are they second? I was watching the Burnley the other day. It's like, how is this team second? It's ridiculous. But you know, there they are. I mean, they've got the points. They've done the bit. They did thrash Chelsea.
They had a 14-game unbeaten run after losing comically on the opening day of the season against Liverpool, a game for which they were ridiculously and criminally underprepared for. They lost that game, but then went 14 games without losing in the Premier League,
they scored an equaliser at Old Trafford.
Kings of the late goals this season. Amazing amount of late goals. How would you stand on that? Is that a team that isn't capable of winning games in 90 minutes, or a team that's strong and has character and can keep going right until the death?
I think scoring late goals is always good.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... I don't see it as... I think if you're... Anyone who was looking at Arsenal's propensity to score late goals and saying, well, this is the sign of something not right. I mean, Jesus, like... How negative do you want to be? You know what I mean? The scoring late goals is always good. I mean, provided the match is close enough for the goal to matter to the result.
Yeah.
It always makes a huge difference to how everyone feels about the result. You score in the last minute, like Giroud at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
You know, to score. I mean, contrast the feeling that Arsenal supporters would have felt when Giroud scored that goal compared to when Joe Allen scored the equaliser against Arsenal in the last minute the previous season, you know. It's the same result, basically. You know, it was like, you know, a difficult away game against the, you know, there's a good possibility you're going to lose the game. You get a point. It's, you know, it's not a bad result at all. But one of them feels a lot better than the other.
Yeah, for sure.
So scoring late goals is like the best thing you can do. I mean, certainly when it was Manchester United, they were doing it all the time. I don't remember anyone saying, well, this is a sign of them being able to put teams away in the first 80 minutes.
Sure,
it's,
Fergie
that
time
nonsense.
And all that.
Like, yeah. I mean, if you can do it, it's not as though Arsenal, you know, over the last few years have been praised continually for how physically strong and relentless they are.
Yeah.
No, that's not something you hear a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that, you know, Wenger knows best, that this sort of more quieter Twitter account, which is more quiet in recent years. I mean, he used to tweet a lot more, I think.
Mm.
But like, isn't the little Twitter bio of the Arsene Wenger parody on Twitter is like, my players have, you know, exceptional mental strength and quality.
Yeah.
They drop a little bit physically in the second half, but you know, and that was kind of like the perception of Arsenal. So if they're kind of doing something which is the opposite of that, then it's got to be good.
No, it is. I think it really is. You know, it's not a coincidence when you can do it. You know, if it happens once, you go, okay, you got out of jail. But there's been 5 or 6 games at least this season where late goals have either won it or rescued a point. And, you know, I think there is probably a little more character, a little more depth to the squad as well this season that hasn't been there. And also, I think for a team that's criticized often about fitness and injuries having a huge impact, and there are obviously some injuries in the squad at the moment, I think that's inevitable in football. But they are capable of keeping going and battering down the opposition and getting a goal late on. So for me, it's a really positive thing.
Well, the big thing, I suppose, now will be what happens against Bayern. I think that's I mean, I know over the Bayern even tweeted about it.
Chelsea though,
we just book our flights. Chelsea, when's the Chelsea game?
February 4th.
So Chelsea play Liverpool and then Arsenal in successive matches.
Mm.
I mean, that's going to be interesting. I mean, if they, you know, that could be a radically changed situation in the Premier League if those matches go a certain way.
Yeah.
But you know, against Bayern, this is the game that Arsenal always lose. This is losing this game, I think, makes Arsenal feel as though we're still the same, you know.
Mm.
Kind of, they could really burst out of like this feeling of helplessness that we can't go beyond a certain level by beating Bayern, which I think is much more doable now than it was under when Guardiola was the manager of Bayern.
Yeah.
I just think that Bayern are going to play. Arsenal will have more of the ball. Than they did
when Guardiola was there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a different type of game. Like not as tense, not as controlled. I mean, Ancelotti is like one of these managers who's like, yeah, come on, players, you the footballers, you sort it out. You know, you know. I don't mean to belittle Ancelotti in any way. But his attitude is more, yeah, look, I've got some great players here. I'm not going to be a guy who marches in and tells them exactly what to do. You know, they know what to do. You know, my job is kind of to make sure everyone's getting on with everyone. Everyone's kind of up for the game,
yeah.
And you know, that's his approach. Like that's what makes him quite successful wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Everybody gets along, and it's usually everyone looks back. Well, it was a happy time under Carlo. You know,
yeah, it's not as intense as Guardiola,
but it's a bit more loose.
Yeah.
Like I think it gives Arsenal a bit more space to kind of, they won't find their weaknesses being hammered as. You know, like Guardiola's, not just Bayern, but also Barcelona, one of the most amazing displays of like 20-minute bursts of football I think I can remember was Arsenal against Barcelona, or Barcelona rather, at the Emirates. Was it 2010? Was it the game where Zlatan scored?
Oh, there was Zlatan scored. There was a couple of games. Zlatan scored twice and then Fabregas equalised. It was a 2-2 draw?
I think that was the one. It's not the one that Arsenal won.
Yeah, 2-2 draw then, yeah.
But the first half was just, oh my God, have you seen? Like, it was just, Arsenal were like, they didn't know where to look. Everywhere they looked, it was like, oh my God, they're all over the place. This is, it was terrifying. You know, it was like, it was shocking.
Yeah.
Like how good they were and how sort of all over them. And you're not going to get that from a Carlo Ancelotti team.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a different type of, more, you know, it's up to the players on the night.
Sure.
You know? So maybe they win that and it kind of makes them feel as though, well, I suppose the Chelsea game as well. It's all of these things will be decided. But you kind of feel, yeah, they can do it, but they usually don't. But maybe...
No, it does feel like that's what they need to sort of get over this, whether it's sort of inbuilt or it's just so ingrained at this point, a sort of inferiority complex when it comes to these big games. You know, Europe, obviously. But you look at the games that are coming up, they've got to go away to Chelsea, they've got to go to Anfield, they've got to go to White Hart Lane, that if this is a team that really can challenge for the title and stay in the title race at least until May, they've got to get results. They can't lose those games, and they've got to win probably 2 out of 3 of those games as well.
1 out of 3 would be good, but if they don't lose, I mean, just losing, like letting the gap get bigger, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you don't lose sort of away games against the big teams, you know, they can turn, you're not giving them any ground, and then it depends what happens in the, you see, Arsenal have been actually, was it the Burnley game, someone was it Gary Breen? A friend of mine was saying he was listening to the Arsenal game on the radio. I think Gary Breen was on News Talk.
Right.
And he was saying, Gary Breen was saying, like, now I didn't hear this myself, so I apologize if Gary Breen, in fact, wasn't saying it. This is all secondhand. But the point was that he'd said, oh, Arsenal once again. And this was after Burnley had equalized, of course. You know, they just can't really seem to put away these teams. He was like, that's all Arsenal do. Arsenal are like, you know, the combine harvester that cuts up the mice that are the small teams in the Premier League. Like, they're ruthless at putting away these teams. Their problem has been not beating the teams, you know, their direct competitors.
Yeah.
That's more been their issue.
Yeah.
Not beating, you know, Burnley or Swansea. Yeah. Like, they do that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help when you're down to 10 men either.
No. Although Arsenal like that.
They do. I mean, I think...
They're the only team that's won more games, only team, I think, in the Premier League that's won more games when they're down to 10 than they've lost. So they actually like that. It sort of makes them feel, hang on a second.
Yeah. A bit of red card action has always been part of Arsenal's best teams.
Comes direct from the top.
Oh, absolutely.
Comes that mad dog attitude.
Mad dog Wenger with
unbelievable. But, you know, he has to, like, tell Xhaka, oh, no, granted, you know, let's have no more of that. And he's just, like, pushing people on the sideline. I mean, it's crazy. Like, he lost his temper much worse than Xhaka did.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree.
I mean, Xhaka just kind of tried to get the ball and like, made a balls of it.
Yeah.
But Wenger just was completely lost his mind.
Well, you know, I think it has been blown a little bit out of proportion. You know, Taylor was just sort of...
Come on. You're nearly 70 years old. What are you doing? Like, how many thousands... he's more than 1,000 games, imagine. Yeah. Things, and he suffered a lot. A lot of things have gone wrong.
Okay, you say it, almost 1,000 games, but in 1,000 games, losing your temper, you know, 4 or 5 times.
Loads of times, more than anyone else. Shoving Mourinho,
okay.
Pardew, taking on y'all.
Would you not shove Mourinho or Pardew if you were in those circles?
Maybe I would. I mean,
certainly.
The guys who he's chosen to take on there, they are...
Anthony Taylor,
among the more offensive human beings ever to have been in the game in England. You know, he has picked out some... some nasty guys.
He needs to, you know. I'm not going to say he needs to learn, but, you know, certainly he should know better. But,
win or learn. Well, of course, he won, so.
Yeah.
I guess there's no need to learn on this occasion.
No, absolutely not. And he can have a quiet word with Granit Xhaka about his own despicable behaviour on the pitch. It's interesting. I was listening to you talking about Xhaka and the red cards, and I went back through his record, right? 2011-2012, he had 5 yellows from 34 appearances. 2012-13, he'd 4 yellows from 34 appearances. And in 2013, something obviously went on in his head where he went, I think I'm going to be a bit of a cunt.
Yeah.
2013-14, 13 yellow cards and 1 red.
Yeah.
2014-15, 2 red cards and 18 yellow cards. Which is amazing. Last season for Borussia Mönchengladbach, 3 red cards and 13 yellow cards.
That's amazing.
And then this season for Arsenal, he's had the two red cards and only 4 yellow cards, in fairness. And he's played as many games as everybody else in the Arsenal side. I mean, I think the one against Burnley was, you know, he should know better. He needs to stay on his feet. I thought the first one against Swansea was one of the most ridiculous red cards I've ever seen.
I'm trying to remember.
The guy turned him. He was in the Swansea half and he just sort of hung a leg out and tripped him.
Oh, that was like, he thought he was going to get a yellow card.
Yeah,
that was the one.
I think everybody thought he was going to get a yellow card.
Apart from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, didn't you see Chamberlain talking about that? He's like, I was sitting there going, oh no, he's off. We'd been told about this. Didn't Rooney get sent off with a similar situation not too long, maybe last season, the season before, where he chopped someone down in the centre circle who had gone past him. And obviously, he did it in such a way that he expected, well, that's obviously a yellow card, and turned around and it's a red card. And he's like, what? You know, that was what happened with... Something similar happened with Xhaka.
I can't remember the Rooney one.
But it was just like, you know, sometimes those fouls are offensive enough to deserve a red card.
I get it. I mean, if he had literally booted the guy...
He didn't.
He just fucking tripped him up. He just hung his leg out. It looked much worse in real time, you know, which I think is the only reason why it might have been given. But
Chamberlain claimed that they had that the referees had said, "Oh, we're cracking down extra hard on this." So maybe that cost him. But like, 9 red cards is insane. That's like from three seasons, or the last three seasons.
Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, so that's 6, 8 in club football. He was sent off in the European Championships as well. So that's 9 in since the start of the 2013-14 season.
That's
so,
like, isn't how many times did Patrick Vieira get sent off for Arsenal? Was it 8?
I can't remember. 9 or 10 maybe. I can't remember. But
that's a huge number of red cards. I mean, that's, it didn't take long for your teammates to start getting pissed off.
Yeah.
Like 1 red card, 2 red cards, okay. 9. It's like, what are you? This is ridiculous. You're just making us
9 in 3 seasons. You know, 2.5 seasons. How
can you trust him? How can Xhaka play against Bayern Munich, for instance? How can they play him in that game? It's like, are you going to leave us down to 10 men in you know, one of our biggest matches of the season? Can we rely on you to stay in the field?
Yeah,
these are the problems.
I mean, the thing about it is, he's been great as well from a footballing point of view. He's been really good. But it almost seems like it's become a conscious decision of his to be a physical player. And clearly, the cards that he's getting have shown that he needs to reassess that his way of playing.
Well, maybe it's promising in a way, in that if it can be switched on so suddenly, maybe it can also be switched off.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a thing that's too difficult to solve.
But is it? Did he change position or something like that? Was he in a different? Was he playing in a different area of the field?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I don't know that much about his early career.
Because where he is now, he's like, he's just the guy in front of the defense. So
yeah,
he does have to make a tackle from time to time, and it's not one of his strengths.
It's not really, but you know, there were a couple of moments, certainly in the Burnley game, where he defended very well and his tackling was okay. But yeah, I mean, just fucking stay on your feet, man.
Stay
on your feet. Anyway, listen, Ken, we better leave it there. Pleasure as always.
Great being in. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much indeed to Ken. You can find him on Twitter @KenEarlys. And if you're looking for just a great general football podcast to listen to, something apart from the Arsecast, of course, then I do recommend Second Captains. If you're not already subscribed, you should be subscribing right now. So check it out at secondcaptains.com. You can find it on iTunes. Just subscribe to Second Captains Monday and Thursday. They do the football shows there. If you expect all football, they do quite a lot of Irish sport as well. So, just bear that in mind, but the football show is above and beyond the best football show there is out there, so make sure you're listening to that. So, the only thing we have left to talk about really is the Southampton game, and it's been, well, it's away from home, and our record against Southampton away from home is not very good. Not very good at all. The last time we beat Southampton away from home was December 2003. It's like, holy shit. Now, to be fair, there was a period between 2005 and 2012, 7 whole years, where we didn't play them at all because they had been relegated. But since they've come back into the Premier League, we've never won. We've beaten them at the Emirates, of course, but not at St. Mary's. So there's a little bit of a thing for us to get over there. Let's see that team on the day. That's Lehman, Toure, Clichy, Seguin, Sol Campbell, Patrick Vieira, Freddie Ljungberg, Ray Parlour, Robert Pires, Dennis Bergkamp, Thierry Henry. That's not a bad team that won 1-0 at Southampton against Niemi, Chris Baird, Marcus Svensson. I think it's Marcus Svensson. Telfer, Hall, Higginbottom, Rory Delap, some guy called Griffith, I never heard of, David Prutton, James Beattie, and Kevin Phillips. So you look at the quality we had in our team that day, and it's still just a 1-0 win. A goal from Robert Pires gave us the win on that day. 2003, and it's 2017. So looking for our first win there since 2000, for 14 years. Woo! Yeah, well, our work is cut out for us, it has to be said. But you might wonder if our work might be made a little bit easier for us by the fact that Southampton obviously had a midweek game against Liverpool at Anfield. They won late on to get themselves into the EFL Cup final. They picked a strong team, as you would if you were in a semi-final with the potential of reaching a final. So hopefully they're knackered. I hope they're really, really tired. Exhausted. The other thing to bear in mind, of course, is that we've got a league game against Watford on Tuesday. So I guess there will be some rotation from Arsene Wenger. He said we might play one or two young players, but it will be a first team selection, he said. So what that means exactly is anybody's guess. There'll be a little bit of changes, I think, maybe up front. I would be very surprised if Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil started in this game, given that we're playing Watford at home on Tuesday night. I don't think they'll be missing from the squad. I think they'll be in the squad and on the bench if we need them, but you're looking at the likes of Danny Welbeck, Lucas Perez coming in. We don't have anyone else in central midfield other than Aaron Ramsey and Francis Coquelin, so we're going to have to play those two. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain could play, maybe a change at left back. Kieran Gibbs is back. Theo Walcott is back in the squad. David Ospina will probably play, and maybe there's room for Gabriel to play in one of the centre half positions, save Koscielny for the Tuesday night. You know, there is room for manoeuvre. Room for manoeuvre and a good, strong squad that we've got this season that should be able to cope with this game. It is going to be very difficult, though, and we're going to have to play well to do it. And it's important to keep the momentum going as well, because we've got this game against Southampton, then we've got a game against Watford, and then next weekend is Chelsea away from home. I think we all know how important that game is. So look, I think we leave it there for this week. Thank you, as ever, for listening. Really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the show. James and I will be here on Monday. We'll have an Arscast Extra for you, looking back on the game against Southampton, looking ahead to the game against Watford. And I'll be back next week with an Arscast looking ahead to Chelsea and all the rest. So until then, have yourselves a great weekend. Take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye. Kicking the tunes here on a Wednesday night on Holy God FM, and that is the sultry sound of Said and the Sweetest Taboo. Sorry, my producer, Monsignor Murphy's in my ear saying it's pronounced Sade. So that's Sade with the Sweetest Taboo. You can listen to your Sade with a glass of lemonade. Anyway, we have a letter here from one of our listeners. Just calls himself A. The letter A. And he says, "Dear Holy God FM, I'm in a terrible state. I'm worrying like I never worried before. Last weekend, I was involved in a high-pressure sporting event. Right at the end, a decision went against my team, and I reacted very badly. I turned to one of the officials and I swore at him. I said to him, 'Fuck off, you f***ing c***. You're nothing but a f***ing prick. You're a poxy f***ing shitbag. I hate you. I f***ing want you bastard, you big bastard prick. You f***ing c***ing bastard, bastard c***ing f***ing shitbag asshole whatever.'" Yeah, I think we get the idea there, eh? "Ever since I've been racked with guilt, it's not like me to lose control like that, and I wonder if you might have any advice for me. Well, I have to say that high-pressure sporting events are not really my thing. The last one I took part in was the under-7s mother and son egg and spoon race back in the day. Patrick Dooley's mother's boob came out. He was so embarrassed, and I think that was the day I decided to become a DJ on Holy God FM. All I would say to you though, is that we all have problems with self-control, and that music can heal us from the bottom to the top, and there's no better woman to do that than Laura Branigan." My producer, Monsignor Murphy, is telling me it's Laura Branigan. Laura Branigan. Oh, the night is my world.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.